So like I was saying, the real practice really happens at home, in seclusion. Here we just learn it. It's really not a practice per se. Even at home, when I'm practicing in the morning, I experience nuisance. It might be a truck flying down on 85. Some guys, like at 4 o'clock in the morning, they just drive at 100 miles an hour. The truckers, sometimes it's the kids, like we experienced today. What I do is whenever there is any nuisance, I quickly shift my attention from the breath to what is happening. Like right now we were sitting and focusing on breath, developing mindfulness, and then we hear some noise upstairs, right? We simply move our attention from the breath to the noise. We make that noise the object of meditation. Let me see how long this thing is going to last. You know, just observing the noise. Understanding that all phenomena inherently are impermanent in nature. We just observe the noise. Sooner or later, the noise is going to go away. And again, gently bringing back the attention to the breath. So that skillfulness is necessary. So like we say all the time, that meditation is not hard work. It's just a matter of skill. Can we observe the noise without developing aversion to it? That's the key. So in those few moments when we are shifting from breath to the noise, we're actually developing our equanimity more effectively, right? Because it's really not easy to observe the noise without reacting to it. But we can. The ultimate aim is to not have craving for anything, nor aversion. That's really the bottom line. Breath is just an object. So if we realize that the aim, the essence of our practice is to completely eradicate all craving and all aversion, then we can meditate all the time, anywhere, in all circumstances. So any thoughts, questions on that?
Well, I found that to be true as well. Like when I meditated and I found, for example, that the kids are very noisy, I've experienced anger because frustration because my meditation time was not being respected. And I've realized that that was an aversion. And so if you focus on the noise instead and accept it, you develop peace. You develop peace meditating. So I found that to be true.
Great. Where is that peacefulness coming from? What is it that cools your consciousness?
Stopping your thoughts.
It's equanimity. It's the inherent nature of equanimity is to bring peacefulness, coolness to your consciousness. So we constantly remind ourselves of that objective. Thoughts of anger, right? So the kids are making noise, you're observing it, and then sometimes it's hard, and the anger, thoughts of anger come. Observe those thoughts. Let me see for how long these thoughts are going to last. That's it. In fact, the moment we decide to observe something with the understanding of impermanence, whatever that thing, whatever that phenomena which has arisen in the body or mind, loses its strength. It's a very interesting thing that happens. That giving attention to something, becoming aware of something, we become a leader of that thing, and the thing becomes our servant, you know. That's the power and beauty of awareness.
It's very deep. It's true.
It's a powerful thing, you know, the awareness is a powerful thing. Any thoughts, questions?
This is when I figure out what equanimity is. Can you explain a little bit further?
What is equanimity?
Yeah.
That's a big question. But in brief, pragmatically speaking, not reacting to something, not having craving, nor aversion to something is equanimity. Mm-hmm. Balance of mind is equanimity. But you know, equanimity is very elusive. We have to understand it through experience. Because if I say we are not supposed to neither crave nor have aversion, then the question arises, are we making ourselves vegetables? You know, are we becoming insensitive? And that's not the case. We are actually becoming super sensitive. And we can understand that only through practice. That when we don't react to something, we actually begin to act. You see? And not just act, but act skillfully.
I'm very sensitive to sound,
mm-hmm.
and it was interesting when the cell phones went off. I felt it physically first, instead of mentally. I mean, I could feel the, almost like a small jar to the body.
Mm-hmm.
Why does that happen? Is my mind, is it my mind or truly my body?
So when that you're feeling something in the body, right?
Yes.
Is it a pleasant feeling or an unpleasant feeling?
It's an energy. That's it.
Okay, so it's neither pleasant nor unpleasant. It's just you're like almost feeling some vibration.
Yeah.
Right.
That's right.
Sure. You know, sound is vibrations. And like, you know, if you are listening to heavy metal in a bar, you can actually, you know, when I was young, I used to go to those concerts, and you can actually feel that,
mm-hmm.
you know, pressure. Just observe that.
So I can stay with the observation.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like what you were saying before. Stay with the observation of energy running in my body.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And then when it passes, bring it back to the breath.
Right.
Okay.
Absolutely. Just make that object your object of meditation.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to do it very skillfully. We don't quickly move our attention from the breath to
mm-hmm.
the other object. Everything gently, slowly, knowingly, gracefully, from breath to whatever is arising, back to the breath. Again, whatever is arising, back. So,
Is it helpful to, in the impermanence of breath, to really also be in the no breath?
Yes.
Say that again?
Well, when you become very relaxed, you've done the breathing practices, then there's those long pauses between the in and the out breath.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that feels to me like that's where the knowingness of the impermanence is, in those long pauses.
It may begin there, but that knowingness is all encompassing. It's in the knowingness of the beginning of breath, it's in the knowingness of the segment of breath, it's in the knowingness of the end of the breath, it's in knowing of the beginning of the out-breath. So every transition is a unique state of consciousness. So beginning of breath is a distinct state of consciousness. Movement of breath is a distinct state of consciousness. End of breath is distinct. Every single transition is a distinct phenomenon of cognition. And when we become aware of that, then we really establish ourselves in the understanding of impermanence. So it's just giving wise attention, you know. But as we practice, that gap is going to increase between the in-breath and the out-breath. And a time will come where only the gap will remain, and some of the practitioners experience up to 4 minutes of gap. At least what I have read is almost they are not breathing. You know, maybe subliminally breathing, but there is just that gap. And that gap is filled with awareness and understanding.
When we were doing the forceful breathing, and then at the end when you said, see what happened to the quality of your breath,
mm-hmm.
I found that after exhalation, it could go a long time without having to inhale.
Right. Absolutely. In effect, you are calming down the mind. The mind is not moving as fast. Right? The movement of breath reflects the movement of mind, or movement of thought. Everybody agrees with that? Like, wait, go ahead.
Absolutely, on those lines, when we experience the distraction, I found the regularity in my breath was disturbed.
Yeah.
So the way I handled it was actually going to forceful breathing and focusing on that.
That's another way of doing it, as long as there is no aversion to the noise. See? Ultimately, the goal is to completely, once and for all, eradicate all traces of aversion, distaste, disliking, resentment, anger, all that is unwholesome. So, absolutely, you can try some other ways. I mean, you can be so creative in your meditation, as long as we are sure that we are not having any clinging to anything. No, we are not pulling on to something or clinging to something, neither we are pushing away something.
So actually, all through the day, I've noticed when we react, if we just are aware of the breath and bring breathing back in control or rhythm, we stop reacting.
Sure. Absolutely.
Because when you're in anger or any other, like you say, unwholesome actions, you know, breath is, it's a witness, so you look at what's going on with the breath.
You bet.
So then if your mind is racing, you're not anxious because you're not sleeping at night, you just slow down your breathing, consciously down your breathing?
Yes, absolutely. The more you tranquilize the breath, the more your mind will tranquilize. So, because they are interconnected, they reflect each other.
I have a hard time sleeping through the night, and I was anxious about it, and it created more of a problem. So what I learned to do, and I've been doing this, when I turn out the light, I'll lie flat and just breathe, be conscious of my breathing. And if I wake up at night, I'll do the same thing. And boy, it has really changed things for me.
Just to get more of, if you want to get more out of that, what I would do is, I would first become aware of the fact that I'm not sleeping. Then I would say, this is a good opportunity to practice.
Mm-hmm.
Let me use this opportunity to practice. And then I would go to that breathing.
Mm-hmm.
That way, you know, because ultimately the aim is not just restful sleep. The aim is equanimity, restfulness, peacefulness, you know. So that's why, you know, in our practice we not only develop concentration and mindfulness, but also wise attention. You know? Any question on that? Especially the aspect of wise attention. We're actually learning the way to discernment. Right? We're actually first developing certain degree of focus, concentration, because we are anchoring our attention in a particular area. So that's concentration. Then we are becoming mindful of the breath, in and out, in and out. That's mindfulness. Concentration and mindfulness are distinct faculties of mind. And then we are going forward and using wise attention. What is going on? Right? We're trying to understand that. And then there are other states of meditation which we haven't gone into, but so in effect our practice is for developing intelligence. If you like the word wisdom, you can say wisdom, you know. Developing intelligence, wisdom, understanding. Paul? Any other thoughts or questions?
As you keep pointing out, and so important that we understand, we learn that wisdom through experience.
Mm-hmm.
How many of our sessions I attend, until I experience it, I'm not going to understand what that wisdom is, right?
Right. Absolutely.
That discernment and equanimity, that has to be experienced.
Right. We are using breath simply as an object to experientially understand impermanence. And then we are going to learn how to understand impersonality. Because you can read in a book also, right? Everything is impermanent. There are probably volumes and volumes of books out there which talk about this phenomenon. But it's just knowledge, not wisdom. So when we read that book, and then we sit and understand experientially through breath, and then later on through feeling, through perceptions, through mental volitions, and through states of consciousness, subtler and subtler states, then it becomes wisdom. Otherwise, it's just intellectual entertainment.
I have a question on letting go.
Mm-hmm.
When we are letting go, when do I know that I have let go?
Anybody wants to take that?
When you're no longer letting go.
Then am I not? Then I would be not letting go. So how do I know that?
I would say when there's nothing else left to let go.
Okay.
Surrender. Just surrender.
He's asking, how does he know that he has let go?
Oh.
when he becomes enlightened?
No.
How do I know?
Well, isn't it? It's a physical feeling too.
Mm-hmm.
It's a. You don't have to kind of grab the breath anymore. Like you're trying to do that, and you exhale, and you feel everything. Yeah.
But I still.
It's a physical thing for me.
Yeah. I would say the phenomena has perished. You know, if it was anger,
mm-hmm.
it has dampened, and you have arisen compassion. If it was greed, that's when I think you will know that you have let it go.
Okay.
When you're not putting any more effort, or your mind is not thinking about letting it go. I mean, that transition.
When you're totally in equanimity.
But that's at that moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
At that moment you let go, but it comes back.
I know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't stop. You still have more to let go.
That's funny, I was meditating.
That's why it's not fun.
Meditating this week and I was feeling a moment of peace. Then I woke up, then all of a sudden my mind starts turning and I felt the stillness. Oh, peace is impermanent.
I think so is enlightenment, right?
Right, but first to going, getting back to your question, letting go, when we actually let go, automatically there is peacefulness associated with it. It's the signature of letting go.
But how do you keep it?
So
how do you keep that peace?
Practice. Practice is the only answer. Today you will experience few moments of letting go. Like you said, few moments of equanimity. Tomorrow, few more. Few more, more and more and more and more. And a time will come when you will be able to abide moment by moment in equanimity. And that's when you will know what real freedom is, what is real peace and real happiness. But in terms of meditative practice, which we did not do today, which is the second phase of our meditation, in our second phase, we observe feelings in the body, right? As we move our attention from the crown of the head to the tip of the toes, and you guys haven't done it yet, but in the second phase of meditation, we observe whatever feelings are arising in the embodiment. And there are three feelings: pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral, right? Neutral is a feeling that is neither pleasant nor unpleasant. So you're moving your attention in and out, top to bottom, simply observing the feelings that are arising in the body, arising and ceasing. In the beginning, you will be only observing pleasant and unpleasant feelings. Alright? You are sitting in the meditation, a thought of anger comes, you will experience unpleasant feeling. You are sitting in the meditation, a thought of happiness comes, you will experience a pleasant feeling. So that thing will keep on going. But a time will come when you will transcend pleasantness and unpleasantness. When that happens, a third type of feeling arises, which is neither pleasant nor unpleasant. And that is the signature of letting go. So you have experienced, you have practiced non-reaction to pleasant feeling, non-reaction to unpleasant feeling. You are doing that constantly, constantly, constantly. You are letting go of pleasant feeling, you are letting go of unpleasant feeling. Eventually, a time will come when the third feeling will arise, a neutral feeling. It's a very sublime kind of feeling. Only a meditator can experience it. A very enlightening, very liberating kind of feeling. And that's when you know experientially that you have
so
let go.
That's what I understood. So only I will know through experience that I have
let go.
Absolutely.
When that state arises, whenever that state is, I will not know until I have experienced it.
Right. But the beauty of equanimity or letting go is the more we let go, the more we're established in equanimity, the more calm and tranquility we carry with us, you know? So, I will also actually recognize your equanimity because you are carrying that tranquility and that calmness with you. So it is all encompassing, it's just not confined to your embodiment. It pours out and it affects other beings. So if you are establishing equanimity, if you were to ask me, what is this thing called auspicious? Everybody has heard the word auspicious. What is auspicious? Anybody?
A marked moment.
Marked moment, okay. Does it has a certain quality. What is that?
It's kind of a defining moment, the past. It's the moment when something changes. It's when something significant has a level of significance. It's just not like a tree falls. It's like, I think there's a quality of significance to it.
Quality of significance. I know many of us know the word auspicious as fortunate and all that, but that's really just a very limited meaning of it. But auspicious as auspicious.
Pure? Is it pure?
Okay. Pure?
Awareness.
Awareness.
Clarity. Clarity.
Clarity. Okay.
Harmony.
Harmony. When you experience that signature of letting go, that neither pleasure nor unpleasant feeling, that experience of equanimity, experientially you will know what is auspicious. Because in those moments we feel blessed, literally. We experience the auspicious.
Experience again. After experience. Not that there is no way of knowing it, I guess.
Great. Any other thoughts, questions?
I had this experience. I was in Asia, a very beautiful place with a beach, an extraordinarily beautiful, pleasant, gentle breeze. And they were doing this meditation retreat. It went on for a long time, it was like 10 days or something. So I was just like, wow, what a wonderful place and what a beautiful experience. And I was having a nice time doing this thing. And then there was a wedding next door in this jungle. So these people came with these weaving things, right? And they had metal blades, not like flexible blades. So there was this motor sound that went on, and so you're like trying to meditate for a long time, and all of a sudden these motors are running, and that's tough. So I said, oh, well, I tried your technique. How do I? Like I said, to see how long it lasts. It didn't. And then every so often they hit a rock with one of those metal blades, and it was this piercing sound, like the experience that somebody over here described. And I was just becoming super agitated. I could hardly handle it. I was almost ready to leave, and I was like, how long will I endure this? And finally I just said, well, I'm just going to watch myself and see how long I react to this and how long it'll take for me to tire out. And it's just it relates to your thing. And finally, there's this moment that came, and I realized it was still going on. And I was finally past listening to that, you know? It was like I stopped being disturbed.
Yeah.
But I actually had to take and say, well, I can't, this thing that these guys are going on for 2 days or 2.5 days or whatever, I couldn't say, well, is that going to, the impermanence of that, but I could, finally I had to say, well, how long will I react like this and wait for that to ride out? And it was a relief to finally get to this place where I realized I wasn't having this really rough time. So, I don't know. It's
in the midst of everything that was happening.
Yeah, they were still clearing this jungle. Going. Yeah.
I love what Paul just said about watching himself, because I think it comes back to what Satish was asking. And I think to fully let go of something, you need to recontextualize the experience so that you become a witnesser.
Mm-hmm.
So you're a witnesser of what's going on, the anger, the fear, the frustration during meditation.
Right.
But you choose not to be attached to it.
Right.
So once you become a witnesser, once you change your context to become the witnesser, then I think you successfully let go.
Absolutely. It's all about becoming a witness. And that relates to the practice of impersonality, which we did not get into today. But every moment we are being a witness, we are being blessed. Every moment we are not taking anything personally, but observing all phenomena as it is happening, we are experiencing the auspicious.
Certain wisdom, I think, are inbuilt in you, because if this kind of situation occurs, like, you know, we're meditating, it starts with the thought that, for me, that, you know, the world is not going to stop. I'm meditating, but, you know, the other activities are going to go on.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first impersonal thing you can say. And that helps me to counteract or whatever.
Right. You're letting go of the world out there.
Yeah, and accepting
right?
the things that the noise is going to be there.
Going to be there,
yeah.
Right. Acceptance. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Acceptance, surrender, witnessing. Great. Well, thank you.